Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your recap episode for this week's American Express. And joining me,
break it all down, Mark Immelman is here. Mark, good to have you.
It's nice to be here. My goodness, it's chilly when the sun goes down. Oh, wowza. I'm keen to see what it's like in San Diego and Pebble Beach in a couple weeks' time. Good golly.
I don't think you're going to get much sympathy from our, you know, Northeastern listeners. Maybe you, Greg Deshar, who joins us as well. I don't think you want to hear too much about Mark being a bit chilly when the sun goes down.
Well, Greg, it was nice today.
Yeah. Greg, forgive me, because you know, you and I were rapping the other evening, and I was like, no, it was like 40 degrees or 38 degrees, and I was like, there's no chance I'm giving golf lessons. Here's me sitting in a scarf and stuff, and you're in the Northeast, and you look like you're about to go outside.
Well, today was one of those days I kind of felt like I could play. I mean, it was really nice out. Not that I got outside very much, but we have had a brutal cold streak of late. I mean, you're talking single digits. It's been bitter. But just, you know, December and today wasn't bad at all. Not quite golf weather. Close. It was close today. So, yeah, nice. But I don't feel for you. I have no sympathy, Mark.
Love you, man.
tough. Well, gentlemen, we had ourselves a heck of a final round, and we're obviously going to go through the winner. We're going to talk about the notables at the top. But, Mark, we were talking about this earlier in the week with the way that the leaderboard was shaping up, especially heading into Sunday. We knew this was going to be a big moment for somebody. There were a lot of guys in the top 10 who did not have a PGA Tour victory. There were a couple of rookies out there. It was going to be a big moment for somebody.
Yeah, and for the longest time, obviously Lee Hodges was playing beautifully, and Paul Barjon, you know, I watched him play as an amateur in the Spirit Invitational down in Houston a few years ago. It's an international event, and he represented France, and at that stage he was at TCU, and he turned my head some because he's powerful, and I was like, you know, I don't think he's going to back down very much. But I still thought after yesterday, Tom Hoagie was sort of the pick of the litter for me, just the way he was playing. And he's been there, and this was his 201st start. And obviously there's experience and stuff like that. So, I thought that would probably be his turn. But, heck, all sorts of credit to some of the chasers. I mean, both the boys there, Brian Harman, we had him in our feature groups coverage for a while. And he was playing alongside John Rahm. And, you know, he looked sort of okay, but didn't really look too convincing. Then all of a sudden just turned up the gas there around the turn and then had a fast finish. And then, of course, Hudson Swafford doing business there. It was cool. For me, the intriguing story, apart from Hudson, who looked great, was Francesco Molinari. I mean, this is a guy who's had dismal form for a few years, missed more cuts than he made in 2020, barely played in the fall. I think he played three times and only made the cut once and finished.
We might have lost him. Mark is on hotel internet, Greg. So we'll continue here and see if we can get him back. But
we can cut him a break.
I think that this was like a NASCAR race, right? I mean, it was Seamus Power, who was the best player near the top. He immediately goes out and struggles out of the gate. Everyone is moving around. You're wondering if Lee Hodges can hold on. I mean, it was just an absolute logjam.
It all day. I mean, there was one point where Cantlay was two back or three back, and he was in tied ninth. I mean, the difference between one shot out there, if you were near the top in that, you know, at that 20 under mark for a while, it was a big difference. You made a bogey, you fall way down the leaderboard. You fall off the first page. So I absolutely agree. It was a complete logjam. And I'm very surprised it didn't go to a playoff. This thing had playoff written all over it for quite a while.
Well, our winner Harris English. No, no, not Harris English. Hudson Swafford gets it done with a Sunday 64. And he, too, struggled out of the gate. Mark, he makes a bogey on one, but he fights back. He makes the turn at three under. And then that's when he got hot. His back nine featured exactly one par because he went birdie, 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 bogey, birdie, bogey, eagle, birdie, par on 18. That's good enough for victory.
Rick, I want to, for the folks listening and watching, I want to recount a story that you and I shared together last fall in Vegas when we were out there in the practice rounds for the CJ Cup. And, you know, we were there, I think it was 14 or whatever it was in the par five. And I said to you, hey, wait here, let's watch these guys hit, because this is Keith Mitchell and Hudson Swafford. And they came on the green and they both laid back characters, the two of them. And then we walked up to the next tee. It was that par five. I think it's 15 maybe or 14. And you and I were right off the edge of the tee. And I've seen Hudson and Keith both play. And they're both such impressive strikers. Funny, the stats don't necessarily show that. And Hudson got up there and just laced one. And I looked at you and you sort of looked at me, didn't say very much, and you raised your eyebrows. And I'm like, yeah, this is who this guy is. And then we were talking to him and he said, I've been playing so well for so long, man. I've just got to find a way to somehow make some putts. Lo and behold, he made some putts in the back nine, and he shot himself just a million under par there.
Yeah, he certainly did. That I remember that moment. It sounds different when guys like Hudson Swafford hit it, and also when you shake his hand and it just, you know, he just dwarfs you with his hand. It's unbelievable stuff. So kudos to Hudson Swafford. I'm stoked he was able to close this one out. And Greg, you know, this is – maybe a continuation of these good vibes for these Georgia Bulldogs. There seems to be a lot of Georgia Bulldogs having success. Obviously, they win the national championship. Russell Henley was in the mix last week. Matt Stafford has himself a day on Sunday. Now Hudson Swafford adds to the list. I mean, this is good times rolling here.
Very good times. It's good to be a Bulldog right now. I mean, poor Russell Henley is like the letdown of the group. And he all he did is contend on the weekend. He had a 5-shot lead going into the last nine for his chance to win. So very, very interesting dynamic there. But what I find so interesting about Hudson is this run that he's been on and what he says. He talks about how, as Mark just alluded to, how well he's been playing, yet coming into this event, it's a tied 48th, the cut, tied 35th, tied 33rd at Mayakoba, tied 32nd. It's like he's so close, but it just wasn't quite happening. He wasn't quite popping. And I had a little feeling he could pop this week. It seems like a good golf course for him. And he did get the putter rolling. He was second in strokes game putting yesterday on the stadium course and again today. And second for the week. Of course, those numbers are only stadium course. But right. He got it rolling with the putter for sure.
What I find so interesting, Mark, is I was trying to find the highlight. Usually when you get a winner on Sunday, there's a moment. I think I have three different moments for Hudson Swafford on Sunday. The approach that he hit onto 16, that's the par five. I believe it was a 6-iron that he just threw up high in the air, 200 yards, lands it nice and soft. He rolls that in for eagle. Then he makes a putt on 17 for birdie. That was kind of him closing the door on everybody else. And just when you thought things were maybe opening up a bit for Tom Hoagie, he makes a clutch putt on 18. I mean, I thought there were three real highlights over the final three holes, and Hudson Swafford came up big in all three.
Yeah, there were. And to be completely honest with you guys, obviously with us on feature groups coverage, we had a monitor, so I couldn't see everything. But I remember it was earlier in the back nine, might have been 12 or one of those holes maybe before then. No, it was 10. He had hit it on the back of 10 and he had like 40 feet down the hill or whatever it was. And I look at my announce colleague, John Swantek, and I was like, you know, this guy is so good. He's just got to make some putts. And then he rolls in that putt over there and it goes in just at perfect speed and drips in on the final roll. And I look at Swantek and he looks back at me and he goes, well, maybe today's the day. And for me, that sort of set off the whole chain of dominoes. Now, there were a few missteps, obviously, with the bogeys on the backside. And those putts and those saves that you referenced over the final few holes were big. But that putt there that he boxed on 10 from outside of 40 feet or whatever it was, I feel like that was huge for the cause because it sort of gets you into the position to do the other special stuff. Perhaps if he doesn't make that long one, then it's a different story entirely.
45 feet, 3 inches was that putt, Greg.
Yeah, which was sweet. It was just sweet. But the one that I'd add to it, another highlight that I think will get overlooked because it was sandwiched between the two bogeys, but the putt on 14 was also a huge putt. And that's kind of outside of that range where you expect him to make it. And he's just coming off a bogey on 13. And you feel like he's letting guys back in the event. And where it looks like he's going to separate himself, then all of a sudden he lets everybody back in. And then he makes that putt, and it kind of put a stamp on it. And then he makes a bogey and then an eagle. So 14 and 16 were both those, that they were both bounce backs that I think were really, really, really important for him in a log jam event like this.
I'll bounce this right back to you, Greg, because you and I talked about this all week long. Hudson Swafford entered this week at 200 to 1 to win this event. To remind people here, Siwoo Kim won it last year at 60 to 1. Andrew Landry in 2020 at 200 to 1, and Adam Long the year prior at 500 to 1. This continues to be an event that allows these longer shots to actually go out and win much more frequently than some of the other PGA Tour stops that we have.
Which is quite interesting. I think it has a lot to do with the golf course setup, the way the golf course is designed, the designer of the golf course and Pete Dye, at least the stadium course, and the fact that there's three golf courses. So and they're not the most difficult on the PGA Tour. So it brings a lot of guys into play because length isn't a prerequisite. And if you heard John Rahm's frustration, I know we're going to talk about that a little later, but John Rahm's frustration of calling it an easy setup and a putting contest opens up the field to everybody. Whereas what you'll see next week is a golf course that separates a little more. It separates the different skill levels a little bit more. This doesn't take anything away from any of the players near the top. It doesn't necessarily make it easier to win. It might make it harder to win. Because it brings everybody back in the mix. But I do think that's part of the reason why you're seeing the long shots win as often as they do. And the when you get below the John Rahm kind of level of player, that top tier, the top 15 guys, everybody else seems to be very comparable in their skill level. They may excel in different areas. Some are better ball strikers, some are better putters, but their ability to score is quite similar. And that gets highlighted in an event like this where the top tier, there's not a lot of top tier guys playing, one. And two, the golf course setup doesn't differentiate between all of those players. And again, really important aspect of this. That doesn't make it easier to win. It might make it harder to win.
Hey, Rick, I want to add to that real fast too. The one thing that we saw here at this event that we haven't necessarily seen in years past, because ordinarily the weather is just perfect there. And no matter which golf course you're at, La Quinta or the Nicklaus Tournament course or the stadium course, you'll typically see the same performances. La Quinta is sort of the easiest, Nicklaus Tournament's the next easiest, and then the stadium field stroke average wise is the hardest. But with that weather that rumbled in on Friday evening, you know, the last couple hours of play made the Nicklaus Tournament course play the hardest of the three, which was out of the ordinary. And then we had some sort of winds a little bit Saturday, and so the weather was completely out of the ordinary. And for the first time ever since I've been at this event, which has been a few years now, I saw a real advantage to playing the golf courses in a certain rotation. And the folks, I think it was, that started on the stadium course, they had the distinct advantage. And a lot of the guys atop the leaderboard were in that rotation. So, look, you can't guarantee it that way. And with three different golf courses, you're going to have this sort of thing. But for the first time in my memory, certainly, I've seen a situation where there was an advantage to play a certain course at a certain time over the first three rounds.
Mm. Hudson Swafford captures his third career PGA Tour victory, his second win at this event, adding himself to a list that pretty strong. I'll read you the multiple winners of the American Express. Obviously, this has gone back and changed names about 15 times. But Arnold Palmer, Billy Casper, Johnny Miller, more recently Phil Mickelson, Bill Haas. I mean, it's a pretty decent little list. Corey Pavin's on it as well. So kudos to you, Hudson Swafford. You are back in the winner's circle. But we talked about the logjam, Greg, and it could have been Brian Harman trying to sneak up and steal this with a Sunday 64. Lonto Griffin holes out for Eagle on 12, and you're thinking maybe this is his moment, and you're getting Will Zalatoris charging at times. I mean, what stood out to you about someone or something in this chase pack?
I think a couple things. The guys, again, when you're watching this on the broadcast, this really stands out to me. There are guys that you don't even see. You don't see their names. You don't see them hit shots until they do something like Lonto did, hole one. And all of a sudden, they pop up on the broadcast, and they're right there in the tournament. So it's the general number of players that are in the mix here. It really stood out to me. I was kind of blown away by it, to be honest. You're talking about Patrick Cantlay in ninth place is five back, and only two back of tied third. So that leaderboard was so jammed, and it took Hudson Swafford to go eagle birdie, then two of his last three holes to separate. But aside from that, I mean, there were 15 guys in the mix, and it really jumped out to me. And the other thing I'll say is Molinari, as you mentioned, Mark, Molinari popping up here and getting himself in the mix could be a big statement for the game of golf, because he hasn't been playing a lot. I mean, you don't play a lot, you don't have a chance to get in that rhythm, and so you're likely not going to play very well. But he comes out, and I'm wondering if this year he's the old Molinari, which can be scary for the competitors.
Rick, I'd like to put a bow on Cantlay real fast. And obviously, Molinari is shooting 367s and a 68. That was awesome to see him start to regain some form. But Cantlay, we covered him a lot, and he had nothing. I mean, that 60, whatever he was, that 62, I think, in day one where he was tied for the lead, that was at La Quinta. And it's the kind of golf course you can not fake it around, but you can hit less than driver off certain tees and put the ball in play. And the greens were just perfect there. I mean, they were like billiard tables. So it was easier to get on a calm day. But the rest of the rounds we had him in our coverage, he just didn't have very much at all. And still to find a way to shoot the scores that he did speaks to kind of the player that he's become, in my opinion, because a real consistent tournament winner will find a way to get in the mix even though they don't have their best game. You've heard the old Tiger Woods thing, you know, I didn't have my A game, I was competing with my C game, whatever. Well, Cantlay had his rear end game, and he still found a way to get himself to whatever it was, deep under par, and make himself a factor still. So I think that bodes really well for him and the future.
Yeah, it is fascinating stuff. And I think the angle of the other two guys that were in the final group, Paul Barjon and Lee Hodges, Greg, you know, the refrain that we usually get in this moment when a guy who might be a rookie or doesn't have a lot of winning or any winning experience and they are in it, but they don't win, is we say, oh, it's good experience. It's good to have them in the heat of the battle. I'm not sure they necessarily feel that way, but we're going to see how those guys respond and play moving forward.
Well, it's a huge deal for, especially if you look at a Lee Hodges, a tied third. And the same is true for Paul Barjon, but you finish tied third in an event like this, it reduces a lot of pressure. You gain a lot of FedEx Cup points with one finish like that. And the way the FedEx Cup point structure is, the points are structured, when you have really high finishes, it values being a popper, right? It's better to come in third one week, miss the cut the next week, come in fourth another week, and 56 another, rather than tied 25th throughout the season. You want to have those high finishes because the points jump up in bunches. So that's a big relief for him. But I'm sure he's at the same time very disappointed that he didn't close the deal in a tournament he felt like he could have won, because now you're talking about the difference between still worrying about your job for the rest of the year and not worrying about your job for 2 years. And that's a huge difference. But all in all, I think he and Paul Barjon and most of the guys up near the top take away a lot of confidence out of the week.
Those guys, even though they had a misstep on the final day, the confidence will be soaring on the way out there, especially Hodges. I mean, Barjon didn't play very well. But there's something before we even get to the playoffs in the FedEx Cup. I mean, Barjon, I think, finished tied 10th. So that's an automatic invitation into next week. I'm not sure if he was exempt into the field. So that's a big deal. And then remember, they've got the Korn Ferry Tour reshuffle. It's coming up here soon. And to get yourself inside that reshuffle so you can plan the rest of the year in your category is a big, big deal. So for these guys having big finishes early, it goes a whole lot further than just more money in the bank account and some FedEx Cup points. Being able to guarantee and plan your schedule because you've situated yourself in the reshuffle, not sure exactly when it is, it's a huge deal for the KFT graduates.
It's a great point, Mark. It's kind it's almost like winning, right? It's like a shorter, you win, you know, you have 2 years where you're there in the schedule, but you get yourself a certain number of starts for the reshuffle. It's a much smaller scale of that, but you're right. You can plan things out for that little bit of time.
John Rahm finished T14, 67, 71 on the weekend, and he lipped out a lot. He was very frustrated on the putting greens, and he voiced some of that frustration that was picked up by a fan and their mobile phone. Jacob, I imagine we don't have the audio for this because I imagine we can't play the audio for this, right?
Yeah, I tried to do a little editing. But
there's too much to edit, Russ.
It pretty much just made it one big bleep.
Yeah.
Made it useless.
Well, he fires some expletives, but in short here, Mark, he's upset about the setup, and he thinks that it was a putting contest, and that might not necessarily be what he liked. And he voiced that as he was walking from green to tee.
It's just a PGA Tour player venting because he's 1 year before and he's the guy who entered the field. You know, he didn't have to come and play the week prior to Torrey Pines, which is like a happy hunting ground for him. He's just got to be a bit careful because Rahm has been caught on microphone, a live hot mic before. But now to have a fan catching you out and then that video to almost go viral, I think. I don't know how many times it's been seen. That fine, which is normally a few thousand, is going to turn into double digits thousand. So it's going to cost him a little bit. And just sort of be a gentle reminder that he's going to have to be a little bit more careful because there's always a hot mic. There are always people listening. And at his place in the game, the world's number one player, he defines his destiny. He defines who he is. And then he's got people and golfers and young kids and all that sort of stuff looking at him, up at him. So you got to be a little careful. If you're walking in between the fans, you don't go popping off like that. You keep your mouth shut. You bite your tongue. Yes, I know you're thinking that it's a setup like that. Everybody knows when you go to the American Express, it's a putting contest. Get over it. Play. If you don't make putts, you're not going to win. You don't have to scream and shout and cuss about it. That's my opinion.
That video has been viewed 601,000 times on Twitter alone in this moment. I'm sure that'll be at a million by the time we wake up on Monday morning. But Greg, the thing that I think is interesting is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, the best players probably want harder setups and ones that are more beneficial to what I guess ball strikers. It kind of goes back to the whole Brooks Koepka thing when you show up at a major championship and he thinks only 25 guys could win. I guess if you're one of those 25 guys, you want that every week.
Yeah, you're playing in a smaller, it becomes a right? limited field event. Absolutely. But again, to Mark's point, which is great, you pick your schedule. So, you know, don't go, you don't order. Or you don't pick out an apple at the grocery store and then get upset that it's not an orange. It's not an orange, but you picked it. So you're right, Mark. This is the same thing every year. It's the same tournament every year. And it was a putting contest, man, when he won. And when you're frustrated because you're not making putts, then, yeah, it's going to be frustrating. But Rick, you're absolutely right. You go to some of the tougher venues on the PGA Tour, depending on why they're tougher, they separate players a little bit differently. And, you know, it's not necessarily that the score is only going to be 10 under par, but it's the difference between a great shot and a mediocre shot. The difference in the penalty is what really separates, and your ability to recover and all that stuff. I mean, on this golf course, there's not a lot of rough. You hit it out, you just have to avoid your major hazards and everybody's going to have a chance. So for a premier ball striker, that advantage is limited a little bit. You don't have to hit it as well as Jon Rahm to compete with Jon Rahm on that golf course. You have to putt better, which a lot of people did this week.
Yeah. We can move on because I don't think this is that big of a deal, Mark. And correct me if I'm wrong. I know it's easy for us to be like, oh, Jon Rahm got caught on the hot mic. Let's talk about it. Now it's a thing. It is my understanding that Jon Rahm and Adam Hayes, his caddy, like Jon Rahm, he just gets it out. Like he'll be walking down the fairway. He just blows off steam for 15 yeah. seconds and they move on. Like this is not really uncharacteristic, or I don't even think it's all that interesting, to be honest with you.
Well, me too. I mean, we saw this video before we went in the air this morning and I just laughed. And when we had Andres Gonzalez, a former PGA Tour professional, he was part of our relief crew coming in, the relief announcers. And he just looked at me and goes, "That'll be costly." And it sort of ended there, you know. But that's exactly who Rahm is. He's mercurial. Heck, he's worked with a bomb disposal expert to try and get him to simmer down and to be able to deal with the emotional outbursts a little bit. But you're right. This is what he does. He goes off, and Adam Hayes just gets pummeled for about 30 seconds or so. I hope he doesn't take it personally. If he did, he would have moved along. It's sort of like right. Greller and Jordan Spieth to a certain extent. And it's just the nature of the beast. But you do that inside the ropes, John. You don't do it when you're walking outside the ropes with people and phones around you, because it's not like you're some nobody on the tour. You're a big strapping dude who's the number one golfer in the world, and folks want pictures of you or videos. Most of folks take videos and videos of sound. So just be a little careful next time.
Right. That's a good point, because you're always on camera. And yeah, you're always on camera. And there's always a mic around. So, I mean, the defense I give to Rahm is it did seem like he was saying it under his breath.
And it cell phone was that? That right. microphone was super hot. The technology was impressive. He was like 20 feet away under his breath, and it came out perfectly clear.
I watched it a couple of times. I thought it was edited. Sounded like somebody took a soundbite and put it on that clip, because his mouth wasn't moving, his head's down, and I couldn't believe it picked it up.
Every broadcast we're ever on, folks, even if they've got us muted and we had a commercial break, and they've got the bird beater on, which is supposed to shut off all the signal into the wherever it goes. The producer's always like, "Guys, this could be going anywhere."
Right.
You know, and it's truth. I mean, even though you think you're muted, somebody somewhere can hear. It's you've got to be very careful in the era in which we currently live.
Always assume you're hot. And coming in hot, Kyle Porter, KP, welcome. He's setting up his mic. I don't know if you can hear me. That's a perfect time. Here's what we'll do. I got to get to our one and done. We'll give Kyle a chance to give his thoughts on the American Express. We've got to talk through Abu Dhabi. There's a lot to talk about, so we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Did you know that more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Those numbers do not add up to me, and I know it can be confusing, the biomechanics of the foot, the bones, the muscles, everything in between, but solving foot pain is simple, and that's where Superfeet comes into play. These Superfeet insoles go into your shoes, give your feet comfort and support where they need it the most, and redistribute the forces that reduce both stress and strain through your entire body, not just your feet. Insoles have been phenomenal for me personally, and they are clinically proven to decrease fatigue, reduce injury, and improve comfort. I can attest to that myself, especially when walking a lot of golf holes that I play. So if you feel good, you play good, you look good, everything works out from there, and it starts from the bottom up. Visit superfeet.com and enter promo code FIRST at checkout for 15% off your first order plus free shipping. It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there, and I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now, here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. Vuori.com/first and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
And we're back. Kyle Porter, can you hear me?
I got you.
All right. Welcome in, KP. We have kind of put a bow on the American Express. We're going to go to our one and done, but you have not had an opportunity to heap praise on Hudson Swafford or any of the several other dozen things that you might be able to come up with here.
Well, Greg looks like Joe Buck right now with that microphone. That's incredible.
You missed the debut last night.
Yeah, we talked about we were like, yeah. Whoa, Greg, impressive stuff right there. Yeah, that headset.
Andrew Catalan. I mean, I just go down the list.
I was hoping for Jim Nantz.
It's not getting crazy.
Doesn't sound that good.
Yeah, I thought that it was funny because I don't have a ton on Sunday other than, well, two things. One, I thought Hudson Swafford's par was actually emblematic. His par on 18 was actually emblematic of the rest of his back nine. It was just a complete roller coaster, and it was the only par, and it kind of was also just, like indicative of how the entire back nine went.
Wasn't an easy par, was it?
We had to make an 8-footer for par. And, I thought what John Rahm said that I can't retweet because it's pretty profane about the course setup was super interesting. I don't really agree with it. I understand where he's coming from. People can go search his name on Twitter and figure out what he said. He was just complaining.
That video of view count is going up now.
Do it. Oh yeah.
That video view count is going up from 600,000 now.
It's really interesting. Did you guys already talk about this?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's super interesting. I thought it was a little unfair because three of the top six guys on the leaderboard were putted horribly. Zalatoris, I think Hoagie was pretty bad with the putter. Now, that's only two measured rounds. I don't know. There's a ton of different ways you could go there, but I thought that was one of the more interesting parts of this entire event.
In that moment, John Rahm does not know who's putting well and who's not. He just knows he hasn't made a single putt, and he's losing ground. And he's just saying, well, it must be a putting contest. That's the way I see it.
Okay, so you got Tom Hoagie, Hodges, and that's just round four, producer Jacob. Go to the entire event. So Hoagie, Hodges,
only two days were counted strokes gain-wise, though.
Totally fair. And I think that's the other part where it's like the point that I'm making is offset a little bit by the fact that you're only counting two rounds. The bigger picture thing with the Rahm deal is the best players want the hardest setups, right? Like, because the things that they excel at, tee to green, get rewarded by really difficult setups. This is a pro, like, if you want hard setups, you can't play in events that are pro-ams, right? Like, you can't play in this. It's not going to be the most difficult setup of the year. So I don't know. There's a lot of different stuff there. Good for Hudson Swafford. He got called Harris English on the broadcast, which was freaking hilarious. It's almost become ironic, and yet it still continues to happen. And it was a fun Sunday.
Very fun Sunday, but we did not do very well in one and done, which I guess is good for the top of the board. We'll get there in just 1 second. Sina Jad, 983,000. He added to his total because he went with Justin Rose, T33, but he remains down in last place. KP, you have snapped through the $1 million mark because of the T25 from Scotty Scheffler. Scheffler got you $55,000. I think you were probably hoping for more.
Yeah, disappointing, but I'm glad that I didn't take Cantlay or Rom. You know, that was on my mind to do that, and that would have been really disappointing. So it's not great, but I'm okay with it.
Three whiffs in a row. Greg with Corey Connors, myself with Matthew Wolf, producer Jacob with Ricky Fowler. We all remain the same. Greg, you burned Corey Connors, which I think was only one bad round. I think he got started off bad on Thursday, played much better on Friday. Oh, he didn't play all that great on Saturday either. But this is the biggest surprise to me, quite frankly. I'm not surprised Ricky Fowler missed the cut. I'm certainly not surprised Matthew Wolf missed the cut. I think I came on here and said he might finish first, he might finish last. We knew those guys were volatile. Corey Connors has been piling top 25s. That to me was probably one of the bigger surprises of the week.
Well, it's probably a mistake to pick Corey Connors in a putting contest.
Yeah, what were you doing? You should have talked to John Rahm.
Right, I should have talked to John Rahm. But look, this is the hard thing about this event this week. You're not going to pick Hudson Swafford in your one and done. And Tom Hoagie, maybe, but probably just me. I'm a big fan of him. There aren't a lot of,
I was gonna say, why would,
times you're going to play Tom Hoagie.
Why would you pick Hoagie over Swafford?
You wouldn't pick either of those guys because you'd never use those guys in a one and done.
Right. I mean, it's very unlikely that you're going to play them in one and done. So I think Kyle makes a great point. You're glad you didn't play Cantlay I guess Will Zalatoris would be looking at the board.
Zalatoris would have been like the best, most logical pick that you could have gotten to because he was one of the top five or six favorites. He finished T6. That would have been like the objectively best, most logical play you could have made.
But are you going to play Will Zalatoris in a putting contest?
Well, I think the answer to that is Siwoo. I think Siwoo would have been the best, most logical. I mean,
Siwoo shaking that ass, shaking that ass, shaking that ass.
Based on the, I always forget about just he's so good on Pete Dye courses, right? Players here. He played well at. Was it Harbortown that he almost won?
I think so. Yeah, I think it was Harbortown.
Remember where he almost made two aces in the same day at Wyndham? His par three proximity, I think it was at Sedgefield, was like six total feet or something outrageous.
He just destroys on Pete Dye courses. So that would have been, I don't know, maybe I regret that, but not really. I still like I like the Corey Connors pick too. It was a good pick.
Yeah, it hurts to get zero out of him because he's going to have some nice weeks. But this isn't the week to be playing. The good players miss the cut in this kind of week. It happens every year, every tournament like this. Really good players will miss the cut, and there's not much explanation for it. It's really easy to miss the cut this week. So, I'm disappointed, but I'll sleep fine tonight.
Corey Connors needs to win, by the way. He never wins.
Is he on the short list of guys who need to win most?
Well,
standards, not by like real standards.
He's never going to Monday qualify again. So that might make it hard for him.
If you're a top 15 ball striker like that, you gotta win. Same with Scheffler, honestly.
Scheffler, Connors, Zalatoris. That's the short list of guys that we think they need to win. They probably don't, but
Scheffler on top of that list.
Connors has won.
Right. Valero a couple years ago.
Yeah, the other two have not. But yeah, Connors just doesn't win enough for somebody who hits it that well.
The coach got $55,000 from Scotty Scheffler, same as Kyle, so he remains in second. Mark, you use Tony Finau, T40, $27,000. You use Tony Finau. We can discuss the merits of that and how you feel, but you just dodged a huge bullet here by everybody else who we were all basically on different guys. There was a lot of bullets for you to dodge, and you have dodged them all.
Yeah, I sort of did. And the truth be told, at one stage, he was looking like a firm miscut there, and he had a fast finish on Saturday evening to make the cut on the number. And then today we covered him in feature groups coverage, and you know, he didn't get the he got the John Rahm memo that he didn't get the memo that it was a putting contest. I mean, hit the thing fine, has just putted horribly the entire week. And yeah, could you call it a wasted pick? Sure, but you know, it's 1 week down. The thing now is just to try and make solid picks, in my opinion. The truth of it all is, for me, I've always struggled with picking golfers through California. All the Californian events, they're so hard to handicap. You know, this one with a three-round cut in a pro-am format on three different courses. Torrey Pines, Riviera, Pebble on Poana Greens. Yeah, you have your usual suspects that play well over there. But, you know, you start missing a few four- and five-footers because the ball's bouncing around the place. You know, they'll get headless as well. So this little stretch of golf for me is just sort of get through unscathed as far as possible, and then hopefully make some hay when you get down to the Florida courses and beyond.
Yeah, it is a tough portion of the schedule to try to predict. Our best bets as a group, we split them. KP, you had Matthew Wolf over Abraham Answer. That did not go your way. Greg, yikes. You had Michael Thompson over Ricky Fowler and Russell Henley. That did not go your way.
No.
I mean, listen, Michael Thompson played great last week, did not play great this week. And KP, Matthew Wolf, I think you knew what you were getting yourself into. And we got bad Wolf. Sometimes you get really good Wolf and he's locked in and he can't miss. Not this week.
Yeah, that was fine. I mean, it's the volatility and you're just kind of betting on that. I don't know what to make of him. Like I just don't know. And that's, I guess, sort of the point, but I just don't know what to expect for the rest of the year. It's not, I don't know. It's very up and down.
I like the three ball, Greg. I like the three ball that you tried to pull off here. The plus 225 didn't work.
It was
but,
a great number.
Yeah.
And look, Thompson could have, he's a great fit for this golf course. He just got off to a terrible start on Thursday. And he fought hard, but you can't shoot. He shot what, five over on Thursday?
Shot a 77, yeah.
Yeah. You're done. You're done after that. I mean, shave the beard after that.
Wow. Oh boy. Tough crowd here. I got a couple of winners. So I went with Patrick Cantlay over John Rahm. I was scared all week long. That cash plus 130. And Mark, you are now 2-1 in your nationality bets. This one, Christian Bezuidenhout, low South African, plus 110. And there was not much of a sweat here. This was pretty easy for you.
I think I said so. I looked at that bet there as the low South African with love to Dylan. And I was like, this is probably the easiest bet in the world. And you got positive odds out of that. I jumped on that thing over there and I wasn't at all surprised. In fact, I was a little more surprised that Bezuidenhout didn't finish better than what he did, because the game looked real sound. I chatted with his caddy, you know, during the week, and he goes, no, he's playing nicely. And he just, you know, didn't finish it off really today.
He was the only South African to make the cut. So you did not even sweat the final rounds like we usually do when we get these matchups. And there was a Seamus Power. I wanted to check this. Caesars had a Seamus Power Russell Henley matchup. Okay, it did. They pushed. Seamus Power entered with a 7-shot lead on Sunday in that Caesars matchup. Shot a 74, 2 over. Russell Henley, 67, Greg. That's a 7-shot swing for a push. That seems to always be what happens.
Oh, yeah.
Not an easy no sweat with a couple rounds.
You know, it makes it fun to watch, right? What a round for Henley. And what a tournament, because he struggles here. Or has in the past. He does not have great history. And coming off of an emotional loss last week, he got right back on the horse. So, yeah, he's in good form, and tough day for Seamus Power. But
this is Henley's best finish at this event, T14. Okay, gentlemen, we got more. Lots of golf going on. So Abu Dhabi, we got to talk about that. And then we've got to talk about someone named Aaron Jarvis that Kyle Porter is going to give us lots of new information on. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And we're back. All right. Across the pond, some big names. Abu Dhabi. Thomas Peters gets it done. He becomes not only the first Belgian to win a Rolex Series event, Kyle, but he now claims his sixth DP World Tour title. I got to get used to saying that. It's the new year. Sixth DP World Tour title. What is the current perception of Thomas Peters, right? Because I think for so long, we were like, look at Thomas Peters. He's got this upside. He's got this game. Then he kind of disappears for a little bit. Now he's won twice in 77 days. Like, what's the current perception on Thomas Peters?
Well, I forgot who said this on Twitter, but I thought it was correct. It might have been Dan Rappaport over at Golf Digest. I think a little, I don't know if underachieving is the right word, but underaccomplished. Like Thomas Peters should be on Ryder Cup teams. You know, he is in that sort of, I think he's younger than Danny Willett, but like just, you know, in that kind of Willett range of like, man, you guys should be like the next generation of European Ryder Cuppers. And it hasn't like panned out like that, you know? And so I think it's, you look at him winning once or twice a year on the European tour. Can we just call it that? Do we have to call it the DP World Tour?
Yes.
Rick, you're on, used to it. You're on mute.
Oh, man. I hate when I that do
was,
that.
Yeah. Tough.
I mean, I was going to say they're not paying us, but Mark said, yes, we have to say it.
Yeah, well, that DP are paying for that name. So, yes, we got it. Let's be respectful.
What to who? I don't care about it. What does DP have to do with my life?
They're the DP world.
You never know.
It's like the
we don't call it the AT&T Pebble Beach Links Pro whatever. We just call it Pebble.
I do.
Do we call it the Memorial presented by MasterCard?
No. I think it's Nationwide, isn't it?
I think
yes, MasterCard is the Arnold Palmer of it.
See, that's Mark's hotel internet knowing it was a bad take and just cutting him right off.
So Thomas Peters should be winning at least once a year on the European tour. Like maybe not winning, but like contending. Like this should be kind of where he's at. My second take on that event, and this is like you can't manufacture this, but man, the wind and the weather coming into effect. It's kind of sweet. Like they were hitting some shots. I saw Rory said on Sunday, he's like, I haven't hit a full iron in like all week. I've been hitting knockdowns and it's like, it's shot making. It's like what the best are the best at. And that's fun to watch. And I think it, I mean, you saw the top of the board there is Peters. It was Hovland. Rory kind of made a mini run on Sunday where he got within three. Cabrera Bay is a good player. Hatton's up there. So Adam Scott, top 10. It just makes for, I think, really quality and interesting golf to watch on TV.
Yeah, I saw a couple of times, Greg, a guy would be like addressing his ball. The wind would be kicking up. They'd take off their hat, hand it to the caddy, and then have to hit the shot without a hat on because the wind was kicking like that. It's a good test. 10 under par was the winning score. And this is a good field. They're going to get another good field next week, too. These points are important, obviously. I know it's early in the year. I know this is like basically their first or second event, but this starts to shape up that race towards the finals.
Yeah. But you know what the other cool thing was about this event? You had Scott Jameson shoot 9 under on day one.
Yeah.
And 10 under wins. So it just tells it turned so much into Friday and made for a really, really interesting event. And I want to also point out on Peters, he won the Portugal Masters in November. Mm-hmm. So I feel like he's kind of coming back into form. And after Ryder Cup, we were also high on him. He lost his game. I think you're going to see his achievement kind of round out a little bit. And I agree with what Kyle was saying about what his expectations are. I think you're going to see that come to life because he is really good, and he lost his game, and it happens. So I'm rather excited to see what he does, because he belongs on
me too.
He belongs on Ryder Cup teams. I couldn't agree more.
He's also 29, Mark. So it's not like we're, you know, he's got plenty of years, plenty of game left. 6-time winner on that circuit. I mean, this is, hopefully we hear more and more about him.
Well, that was what I was going to add. And then I wanted to add too, you know, the one thing about Peters is he's got a little John Rahm in him where he can run hot luck in the blink of an eye. That boy will go from zero to volcanic and, you know, after one golf swing. And in many respects, that sometimes gets in his way, because unlike a Woods or some of these great winners who had tempers, who can hit the bad shot, just blow their lid, and then be fully focused and singular on the next one, Peters tends to take it with him. And at that level, when you're competing against that guy, those guys and that talent, you can't afford to be hitting shots without 100% focus, or shots where you're living in something that's happened. So if he starts to let the game come to him, I feel like he'll start to fulfill the physical potential that he's shown, because he is special. I mean, the way he hits it is so, so pretty. But he's going to have to just learn, okay, golf is an imperfect game played in an imperfect environment. I'm going to hit bad shots at times. I'm going to have to survive at times and then thrive. And when things aren't going my way, I can't just be just throwing the toys out the cot, because then I'm losing strokes because I'm handing strokes to other folks with that mindset and mentality.
Mm. Good stuff. Handing strokes to other folks. I like that. That was
catchy.
Yeah, that I like was very that. Catchy. KP,
yeah.
You have an article on CBSSports.com right now about an amateur. His name's Aaron Jarvis, who just secured his spot in the Masters and the Open Championship. And this is kind of a story that should be told, should be heard.
It's incredible. I mean, so Aaron Jarvis, a freshman at UNLV, is 19 years old. He's from the Cayman Islands, population 71,000. So a third of Augusta. It's a third as big as Augusta, Georgia.
Wow.
Which is not that big. He's ranked 1,669 in the world, but that's among amateurs. That's not like in the official world golf rankings. That's that's in the WAGR, the World Amateur Golf Rankings. He's played 7 college rounds at UNLV, 7. Never broken. He's never been better than 72 in any of those 7 rounds. He had a quote after he wins the Latin America Amateur Championship where he said, you know, I got that experience at UNLV and I just came in with a lot of confidence to this event. And I was like, you played 7 rounds and you haven't shot in the 60s yet. Like none of your rounds have been in the 60s. I think you have confidence because you're 19 and you play college golf, not because you've had a lot of good experience at UNLV. His last 3 wins include the CIGA, I think that's Cayman Islands Golf Association, Christmas Match Play Invitational, the South Florida Junior Open, which I think is actually a big deal, and the 54-hole Junior Open at Celebration. No idea what that is. He was the co-winner. They didn't have a playoff. They just declared co-winners. And now he's going to be playing in the 2022 Masters with Rory, Rahm, and Dustin Johnson, and the 2022 Open Championship at the Old Course in July. So it's really an unbelievable story that the 1,669th ranked amateur in the world who's beating guys that were ranked in the top 50 at this tournament is going to be playing in the Masters and the Open Championship. It's cool that those that Augusta National and the RNA give invites to guys that to players that win amateur events like this. And it's just a cool story to be 19 to play at Augusta. You're from a country that's got 27 holes on the entire island. Not like there's one place that has like there's only 27 holes on the island that you grow up playing. And now he's in the Masters and the Open. So a really cool story out of the Latin America Amateur Championship.
You know, it's probably pretty competitive because everybody knows there's 27 holes. And it's like, there's no secrets out there.
I know.
Right? Like, and when you're playing against your buddies, like, there's no secrets. There's no home course advantage. It's everybody's course.
There's nowhere to go either. It's not like, oh, well, these guys play over here. You got to beat everybody that's right there. And that's kind of what happened at this event. Also, there's a great video of him. So he makes a bunch of birdies and then closes out his front nine on Sunday, bogey double. And then he makes a bunch of birdies and he hits one in the water on 16. It looked like he was cooked, like it was over. He makes like a 35 footer that he walks in on 16 for bogey, birdies the last to get into the Masters and the Open Championship. It was pretty awesome. It was really, I mean, just a cool life moment for him. I mean, he may or may not go on to play professional golf, but just one that he'll certainly remember for a long time.
How can you not be romantic about golf, Mark? How only in golf does stuff like this happen, right?
Golf is the greatest, man. It'll drive you batty. It's the coolest sport that is so difficult, and we love it, and it drives us bananas. But stories like that bring tears to my eyes because, I mean, you're looking at a guy and me that if it wasn't for golf, I wouldn't be on a call with you guys. I don't have many other skills. And I come from a little town outside of Cape Town that's smaller than Augusta, Georgia. And I get to call the Masters. So it's special. And I love the fact that the Masters Club and the RNA have respect the Latin American Am enough, as they do with the Asian Pacific Amateur, to allow the amateurs into the event, because that was Bob Jones's wish. And I think it was a worthwhile move because the Public Links Champion used to get in there. And that tournament was obviously disbanded by the USGA. And that's Tim Clark from South Africa. My brother got into Masters as an amateur from the Public Links. So now to make this thing global, which the game of golf is, I think it's just tremendous.
Yeah, 71,000 population of the Cayman Islands, Greg, UNLV student population alone, like 29,000. Now he's getting a lot of experience in those seven events, probably a little bit of culture shock, also going to get a ton of experience. I just think, like, what's that leap going to be, right? I mean, he goes from the events that Kyle listed off to playing at Augusta National, to playing at the old course.
College.
Like,
come
on. Like, could you have handpicked like two better spots on the planet?
No, you couldn't. If you could play in any two majors, that would very likely be it. I think those would be one and two. But I think about what it's going to be like when he goes back to UNLV. And if you've played seven rounds at your college, you're not the star of the team. You're not the guy everybody expects to be playing in the Masters, but boy, your respect level with your buds on the team just went through the roof, and they're going to look at you a little different now, which is kind of cool. Because the college golf team, while they're close, when somebody on your team does something like that, it's special and really unique. So I'd be excited for him. And think about the coach at UNLV, right? If he's, how do you sit him? How do you, I mean, he's got to play. He's going to play in the Masters.
I'll tell you one thing's for certain. His college teammates who probably didn't, if there was anyone who didn't like him, they're becoming fast friends because there's tickets in the future over here. Yeah.
leave some tickets at Will Call for me, please. Yeah, Thank you very much. All right, gentlemen, I think that'll do it. Danielle Kang won on the LPGA. Vegas Golf, Morikawa, Xander, Danielle Kang,
Aaron Jarvis,
Jupiter
Rick Damon. I'm not quite as decorated yet, but I'll work on that. Any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Big week next week. I'm excited.
Okay, let's talk about this. Yeah, so next week is Wednesday. to Saturday, which obviously means the programming is going to be a little bit different. We'll do our DFS preview normal time, 5:30 Eastern Monday. And producer Jacob, we are going early for the mega preview. Is that going to be live or are we recording that?
Plan is to go live. And okay. We will be on location, at least some of the crew.
Yep. Yeah, we're going to be all over the place next week. So KP, where you and Jacob and are going to be at what, the PGA show?
Yeah, we'll be at the PGA show in Orlando on starting like Monday night.
And there's always good stuff there. You always get to like do
it's like a scooter, you know, there's a scooter simulators, you know. It's all the stuff that's fun for like the first 2 days. And then you're sitting there on Friday.
By Friday, you're like, okay, I think I understand like what the equipment's gonna look like this year.
Bring us home some sweet swag that you get.
The simulator stuff is awesome. Like by Friday, you're just like, you know, pounding out 18 holes as fast as you can. It's super fun.
So we had I think last time around we had some closest to the pen contest with our friends at Supreme Golf.
Yeah. We were playing the old course on the simulator, which was awesome. So
you don't even have to make the trip.
It'll be I would rather make the trip. it'll be fun. I haven't seen producer Jacob in 2 years, so it'll be fun just to get together.
Mark, you and I will be at Torrey Pines.
We will. I travel out there Wednesday morning. Get there some stage at late afternoon, and then it's preparation Thursday and show Friday afternoon. Friday, Saturday, weekend because of the AFC Championship Sunday. So looking forward to it. I love Torrey Pines. I think the South Course is a brute. It's always going to, beat folks up a little bit. And if you're up for that sort of stuff as a golf fan, it's a good tournament to watch. The view is unreal.
It's unbelievable. So we'll be piecing it together remotely. Greg, where will you be next week? Right there?
I'll be right here. Very most likely I'll be right here. I'm not traveling anywhere. Course record, the picture you see behind me, that starts tomorrow, our first episode of season 3.
That's right.
So we'll be busy with that, rolling on. And then a lot going on here with you guys, and it should be a nice week, but I'll be in my usual one of my usual spots.
Round by round recaps are Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, because we're not going to compete with that little sport they call football. We will not compete with that. But otherwise, I think that'll do it, gentlemen. Producer Jacob does all the hard work behind the scenes. Greg Ducharme, he's available on Twitter at TheRealGFD. That's Mark Immelman, at Mark_Immelman. Kyle Porter, at Kyle Porter CBS. And you can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey everyone, this is Jimmy Conrad, your favorite former U.S. Men's National Team player and the host of the Call It What You Want podcast, and I'm here to tell you that Vuori is a versatile clothing brand that speaks my language. It's inspired from the coastal California lifestyle, just like me. Its products stand the test of time, just like me. And also just like me, it endeavors to inspire others to live vibrant, healthy lives. Vuori gear is designed to look great in everyday life while also being perfect for any workout activity. I'm currently rocking the Men's Sunday Performance Jogger, and don't let the name deceive you. You can wear these babies any day of the week and in any situation. I'm talking going to the office, running errands, the gym, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/sports. That's Vuori.com/sports. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Again, go to Vuori.com/sports and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.